Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, April 17th, 2014. And another day in the gold and silver markets, not to our liking. But you have gold down $7.40 today at $12.95. Silver is down 2 cents today at $19.72. Platinum was down 26 bucks today at $14.18, down almost 2%. And palladium down 7, just under 1% at $7.97. USDX today, again, still under 80. 79.85 up 0.03. Crude oil's moving up a little bit higher, 0.67 at 104.43. I'm not quite sure if that has anything to do with what's going on in Ukraine. I guess they're over there in Geneva meeting, trying to resolve issues. And I guess they finally have the EU looking to, or the Ukraine looking to pay its bills. But, you know, we'll have to see how that all plays out. And the paper markets today, heading into a weekend. Computers, yeah, the Dow. Let me make sure I have these. I don't know why. Good afternoon, Al. Well, I'm trying to get this updated. I have.
Did you get unfastened with your computer there or what?
Yes, I did. It's responding.
Mm.
But, we had some gains today in the paper markets today. The NASDAQ was up 9 at 4,095. The S&P up 2 at 1,864. Although the Dow looks to be down today, is ending lower, down 15 at 16,408. That's a pretty poor showing going into a holiday weekend, or a holiday shortened week anyway. I'll have to check to see exactly what markets are trading tomorrow. Most of them, if they do trade in the morning, will be closing usually about 12, 1 o'clock on Good Friday. But 10-year yield, that's really moving. I mean, yesterday it was 2.62. Today, 2.72. It's a pretty big move for the 10-year yield. And good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody. Are you ready for Good Friday?
Yes, I am. I'm always ready for Good Friday. Mm-hmm. I was baptized on Easter.
Really?
Yes, I was. Yes, I was. Good. So that's always a special, special time. But how about you?
I'm as ready as I will ever be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one of those things where, I don't know, what can I tell you? It's not as if I'm all that good, Melody, but I don't expect to get a lot better.
Well, maybe you ought to talk to Bloomberg and see how he does.
Yeah, now he figures he's about perfect. If I were, what were you telling me yesterday? He thought he belonged at the front of the line going into heaven?
He doesn't even think he should have to stand in line. He's going right through.
Maybe he could slip a $100 bill to the maitre d' and they'll give him immediate seating.
That's what he's expecting.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, the guy's got to be crazy. He thinks he should be first in line in heaven, getting into heaven. And then he says, if there is a God. Bloomberg, this is the man who's going to spend $50 million, allegedly, to try to start some sort of a organization that will fight against the right to keep and bear arms. They will seek more gun control to prevent gun violence. All right? It was because we don't have gun control, at least not to the extent that Bloomberg wants it, that the people in Clark County, Nevada, Clive and Bundy and the people that were associated with him, it's partly because we don't have gun control that they're still alive today. You know, there was a standoff this last weekend, and some of the people involved in the standoff were armed. And presumably that made a difference in the minds of at least some of the Bureau of Land Management people. And they said, we don't want to get into a fight if we can get shot. And so they said, let's go home and have dinner, which is what they did. The point is that guns sometimes kill people, but far more often they intimidate people and cause them to stop acting in ways that are violent or aggressive. I'm going to make you a bet that out of every 100 times a gun is pulled, the trigger is not pulled, I'll bet you 90-95% of the time. It's one of those things, it's enough. You see a gun, say, okay, I'm going home, I'm going to go watch TV. They prevent far more violence than they cause. And if and when we ever, people like Bloomberg, ever succeed in managing, in causing increased gun control in this country, they'll also cause increased number of deaths. And that's not just, you know, anyone who's looked for a study done by Jews for the Preservation of Firearms, and it's been available since the early 1990s. I can't remember who put the study together in the first place, but he points out that genocide in major nations is virtually always preceded by gun control. The first thing the Nazis did before they ever marched any Jews into concentration camps is they established gun control. And because they established gun control, the Jews were unable to effectively defend themselves against the Nazis. And Stalin in Russia, he established gun control and took the guns away from all of the Russian people. And then he started with concentration camps and whatever that allegedly killed perhaps as many as 50 million, maybe more. We saw the same thing with Pol Pot down in Cambodia. I can't remember how many instances I've seen in the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms. You can look that up and you'll find their website and you'll find the original report. I would guess that they can point to 12, maybe perhaps as many as 20 instances of genocide where a government started to murder its own people in large measure. And these instances of genocide were always preceded by gun control. You have far more to fear from your government than you do from anybody walking around on the streets. In the final analysis, your government is the one you got to keep an eye on. I know there's crooks and criminals and so on, and you got to keep your eyes peeled out on the streets also. But the government's the one that's going to get your wages. The government's going to get your savings. The government's going to, it will get your liberty. The government's going to put you in a straitjacket and have you wired and tagged like a cow out on a feedlot if they have their way.
And one of the few things that helps keep government at bay is firearms. You don't have to shoot them, but you do have to have them. Anyway, Bloomberg disagrees. He thinks we're safer without them. I think he's a satanic SOB, but, you know, we'll see. Perhaps when I get, when the day comes and I see Bloomberg up at the head of the line, all right, up there in heaven waiting to see St. Peter, and I see him at the head of the line, I'm going to sit back and say, uh-oh, I guess I made a big mistake, because if Bloomberg is going to be hit first, he's going to be there first, I must have made a serious error in judgment. On the other hand, if I get there and Bloomberg is way behind me, I'm going to sit back and say, ha, ha, ha. Dear Mr. Bloomberg, I guess you made a mistake.
Well, there's no mistake today. We have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. I believe she's there waiting. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al. How you doing?
Hello, Wendy. I'm sorry to keep on jabbering. Tell you the truth, it just skipped my mind. I got off on this gun business, and I forgot that you were scheduled to be here today.
Well, that's all right.
I blame Melody for that.
I blame
Melody for
that,
or maybe Frank. I'm not sure, but somebody's got to be responsible besides me.
Oh, let's blame Obama.
Bloomberg, Mayor Bloomberg, he's the one who's responsible.
We talked about it 2 minutes prior to the program, so come on, Al.
Well, we'll just blame Obama. How's that?
Well, yeah, there we go.
There's somebody we can all agree to.
There you go. Well, we're going to talk about Obama. We're going to talk about how important is iodine today. You know, because we've been hearing a lot of folks are a little anxious about it, especially on the West Coast because of the fallout from the Fukushima. So iodine's pretty important, though. It's in every organ and all your tissues. And there's a lot of scientific research that suggests your iodine will help you fight off diseases like cancer. So, but there's a problem. Doctors are noticing that we're low in iodine overall. So we're going to answer a question about iodine supplements in the next few minutes. And can iodine supplements help or can they hurt you? So if you ask some of the experts like Dr. Joseph Mercola, he thinks worldwide the statistics on iodine deficiency is around 40%. But then if you ask Dr. David Brownstein, who is an expert on iodine deficiency, and he also wrote the book Iodine, Why You Need It, Why You Can't Live Without It, he says 95% of his patients are low in iodine. And the CDC says 2.2 million American women are deficient in iodine. But I think overall the statistics would be a more realistic figure is like 11 to 15% of Americans probably could bump up their iodine a little bit. So, and there's an easy way to check. If you want to go to your doctor, you can check your iodine level. They will either do a urine sample and check it that way, or they could do a skin test. Now, Dr. Mercola says if you have your test done on iodine, if you get a level of 50 or below, it indicates you have iodine deficiency. So, but he says over the last 65 years, people have been registering lower and lower levels of iodine in their system. So, and they think a lot of it could be some of the foods aren't rich in iodine any longer. And also, some foods that we're now eating, like bromine, they say, which is in your baked goods and medications and soda. It's inside plastic containers. It's in pesticides, personal care items. So they think that that has something to do with it because bromine seems to displace iodine and increases your risk of diseases like cancer. And they think that it's contributing to the breast and thyroid and ovary and prostate cancer we're seeing a spike in. So the problem is foods. They're not as rich in iodine as 100 years ago. We've got, obviously, you know, demineralization of the soil, fluoridated water, other contaminants that they think are helping to drive down these iodine levels. Now, before Fukushima, Melody, Al, the Japanese were able to consume about 90% of their natural iodine through their sea vegetables and their diet. And if you compare it to the recommended daily allowance of iodine the Americans get, it's about 150 micrograms. The Japanese would eat 13,800 micrograms of iodine in one day. And before Fukushima, they had very low or no cancer rate over there. So iodine's pretty important. What do you think of that?
I think, well, I think it's good information. I've heard in terms of testing for iodine. Some people have taken just a conventional iodine of the sort that you use on a, you get a cut, you put iodine on it.
Yeah, we're going to do
and
a skin test.
They just paint a patch on their skin.
Yep.
They paint a patch on their skin, maybe half an inch square, maybe an inch square, whatever you feel like doing. You
right.
let it dry on your skin, and if it's gone in a relatively short period of time, it's indicated your body is sucking that iodine in, grabbing it because they need it, because the body needs it. On the other hand, if the patch is still there, you go to bed with it at night and it's still there in the morning, pretty good evidence that you're not short of iodine. Do you have any
right.
idea if that's reliable?
Yeah, I was going to get to that. Well, very good there. You're correct, Al. If you don't want to do the urine analysis, you can do a skin test. Now, doctors even have a skin test. It's called their SSKI, super saturated potassium iodide test. But you can use a potential source of natural iodine, which will already have high concentrations of the iodine and potassium, and you can test your skin yourself. So for a purpose like this, I would use a black walnut tincture because it's going to have a real high source of your iodine and potassium. And you can, like, you paint a little square spot on the inside of your arm and spread it, let it dry, and it should have a yellowish stain to it. Now, if the patch disappears within a few hours, it's an indication you need more iodine. If the patch is still there 6 hours later, it's a safe bet you have adequate iodine in the body. Now, but according to Dr. Brownstein, he said the absorption rates are going to be influenced by atmospheric temperatures and your altitude. So he says if you live in Denver, Colorado, which is 5,000 feet above sea level, if you compare that to Los Angeles, California, at sea level, he says your iodine's going to disappear much faster if you're in Colorado. So keep that in mind if you're doing your own skin tests out there. And we're going to answer the question about supplements and if you can overdo the supplements. And the answer is yes, you can. If the thyroid does not get enough of its iodine, its own hormones from iodine, you can develop hypothyroidism. But in like, you can also overdo the supplements, and you can develop what is called a subclinical milder version of hypothyroidism. And the symptoms would be the same, you know, fatigue and weight gain and so forth. Now, they did a study in 2012, and that was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. They said the average American is low in iodine, and they're also now taking too much iodine in the form of supplements, and they're creating this subclinical version of hypothyroidism. So they recommend you not take 400 micrograms a day if you're using a supplement to avoid that risk. But if you're using a natural source, just think of the Japanese. They were consuming 13,000 micrograms a day, and they didn't have hypothyroidism. So they were getting in a natural source, not a supplement synthetic source. So that's a big part of so your thyroid doesn't actually take in iodine directly. It metabolizes it, and it converts it to an iodine L and an iodine L2, and then the thyroid uses that to make its thyroid globulin that goes out and it bathes all your cells and your mitochondria and kind of recharges you. So when that happens, if you're using a supplement, a synthetic source, it creates a little bit of oxidative stress on the body for the body to try to metabolize that. So that's why a natural source is going to be better. And I know a lot of people say, well, aren't we getting iodine in our salt? You know, we see the iodized salt everywhere. Well, according to Dr. Merkel Pick, according to the doctor, says there's no standard mandatory requirement for salt refineries and manufacturers to iodize the salt. It's completely voluntary, and right now, one-fifth of the salt products are iodized.
So four-fifths are not, so you can't count on getting it out of most of your salt products.
Right.
Wendy, give us some contact information, and okay. We're going to have to move along.
Okay, sure. They can call us at Apothecary Herbs. Their number is toll-free at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663. Our web address is thepowerherbs.com, thepowerherbs.com. If they want to check their iodine level, we do have the black walnut.
All right. Thank you, Wendy.
All right. Bye-bye.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, what's next, Melody?
I just want to remind folks that Silver Eagle is the best price anywhere you can find. Visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, our programs are archived there on a daily and monthly basis, so make sure you get there. And we got great prices on everything gold, silver. We'll be back with specials beginning on Monday. Tomorrow we'll be open a half a day until 12 noon. Tomorrow is Good Friday, I believe. Alan, myself, will be taking a holiday. We will be playing a rebroadcast at the 4 o'clock and the rest of the day. So the program's tomorrow, unless there is breaking news, and I will be here. I don't know about Al.
You can find me.
I'll have to nudge you. You know, come on.
You can find me, maybe. If you can't, then maybe not.
We will always be here for breaking news, but with Good Friday, we will be closing at noon. So I do want to wish everyone a blessed Easter at this point. And Al?
Well, happy Easter to everyone. Happy Good Friday. And What's next, Melody?
This report came out, it's been out for a couple days, and I don't think we talked about it. And it's, you just kind of have to scratch your head and say, you know, you got to be kidding me. Well, you know, Yellen's been talking about, Janet Yellen, head of the Federal Reserve, she's been talking about, oh, we're going to be cutting back on the stimulus, but, you know, we'll guarantee you low rates. We're not going to let those rates increase, and on she goes. And how can you pull back on stimulus and keep the rates low? It's impossible, unless you create another program somewhere along the line that you don't tell anybody about, or you just rename it, and the program continues, and everybody is fooled temporarily. This has been happening since about last August. Belgium's. How big is Belgium, Al?
Well, it's not as big as Texas.
All right.
Probably not a lot. There are probably a couple of counties here in Texas that are the size of Belgium, but go ahead.
Well, their holdings of U.S. Treasury debt has increased to $484 billion from $160 billion. That's putting the small country of 11 million in third place after China and Japan among the United States' biggest creditors. Not Belgium, and of course we all know it's not Belgium itself that is buying up all the U.S. bonds. It's probably the federal government in there, but that's most likely what it is. But they say traders and economists can only guess at the real source of the investment. The bonds are held at Euroclear, the market-owned central securities depository that is located in Brussels. And the actual ownership is non-transparent. It could be anybody. You can have anyone in there purchasing up these U.S. treasuries. We also know that U.S. treasuries are also used as collateral for derivative trades, in which Euroclear is widely used. In any case, it's getting harder for the U.S. to track who owns its $12 trillion debt. It's kind of like the housing market. Who owns your home? A development, and it should be alarming for Treasury officials because it creates the risk of unexpected sell-offs, and of course, then you can have the other turbulence in U.S. debt markets. So here's just another, as we call it, Al, fin the breeze.
Well, it's one of those things, if push comes to shove, they're holding all that debt, they're a tiny country, we could go to war with Belgium, Melody. And we could accidentally bomb whatever facilities they have that identify who holds those, excuse me, that debt. And then we could wipe out the debt.
Mm.
Very simple. Bomb Belgium. Could be done in the afternoon. It's not even a full day's work.
Well,
probably not. But in any case, it's a possibility. It's what we're really talking about here is Belgium is also the headquarters for European Union, and I'm not sure if the European Central Bank is located there or not, but I think the European Union is located in Brussels. Their headquarters is there. This has something to do with the European Union buying up enough debt from the United States, enough debt instruments, in order to keep us afloat a while longer. It's also another one of those leaves in the breeze, as Melody was saying, that suggests that the government is in difficult and perhaps desperate circumstances. You know, there was, I don't have it right in front of me. I might be able to find it before we do the next segment. I'll look for it when we take our break. There's a section in the Congressional Record that goes back to about 1991 or thereabouts. I don't remember the year correctly. I don't clearly. excuse me. I'm still clowning around with this bronchitis. It's been dragging on for most of 2 weeks. It gets a little better every day, but I come up and jump on you once in a while when you're not expecting it. Congressman Traficant from Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
He announced that the Congress was sitting in the they were administering the world's largest bankruptcy, and it was that of the federal government. Now this is in the Congressional Record, and Traficant was serious about this, and I think I've got a copy of it
that someone sent me recently an email, and I'll be able to find it, but it'll take me a couple of minutes to do so. We'll see if I can find it during the next break. We'll bring it up and read it. And the point is, our government is not just technically bankrupt. It really is bankrupt. That's what the fiat currency is all about, or at least it's a lot of what the currency, fiat currency, is all about. We're paying, we're not, given that we are bankrupt, we can't pay our debts in gold and silver. We are discharging our debts with fiat currency, Federal Reserve notes, green pieces of paper that have no intrinsic value. And it is certainly evidence of being insolvent or in a bankrupt condition. And here we have Congressman Traficant warning us over 20 years ago that the federal government was overseeing the biggest bankruptcy in the history of the world, that of the United States government. Or he's saying Congress was overseeing the biggest bankruptcy in the history of the world, that of the United States government. Where that went from then, I don't know. I don't know what really happened. It's possible a Traficant made some comments, and maybe his comments were not exactly accurate, but I've never heard them officially refuted. And I do know that Congressman Traficant eventually spent several years of his life in the slammer. They got him and jailed him, and a lot of people think the reason they jailed him is because he let the cat out of the bag by talking about the bankruptcy. What does it mean if the government goes bankrupt? Most of us suppose, I mean, we've thought for years that the government was bankrupt. People in my end of the political spectrum, we've thought, yeah, they're bankrupt. But we assumed they would simply continue in that bankruptcy forever, and they were too big to fail, essentially. I'm not sure if that's true anymore. I'm not sure if they are still too big to fail. And if they are bankrupt, if it turns out that's true, then technically none of us have any real rights. We don't have any basis to suppose that we will be paid in full for whatever money we've loaned to the government in the form of, if we buy their bonds, if we rely on Social Security, if we rely on government pensions, 401ks, I don't know how far you can chase this, but it's just another one of those, you know, you look at it and say, OMG, we have problems here, folks. And a lot of us simply assume, in fact, most of us assume that the debt will always be paid. One way or another, it doesn't matter if the national debt is $17 trillion or $90 trillion or $200 trillion. It doesn't matter. Somehow we'll find a way to pay the debt because it's just naturally assumed. We assume the government's going to make good on the debt. And I would bet that the vast majority of the American people, I won't say that the vast majority think about this kind of question, but if you were to present them with a piece of paper with some questions on it, and one of the questions was, will the government be able to repay the national debt? I'll bet you 80-90% of the people in this country actually think they can do it. And it might be more than that. They may not be consciously thinking about it, but if you ask them the question, say, yeah, I think they can pay, yeah. I think that's what most people would suppose. And I believe that presumption is absolutely false. The debt can't be paid in full. It won't be paid in full. Those of us who are relying on being repaid on our paper debt instruments, if my analysis is correct, if my understanding is correct, we're going to be badly disappointed and we're going to suffer a great loss. So where's that all take us, Melody? I don't know. It's just another one of those things that we see. And we can either attach significance to them or we can dismiss them as some sort of an anomaly. We talked yesterday about the idea of the government buying 2 billion bullets. Was that simply a political fact or even an... It was an economic indicator. It indicates the government anticipates that there may be violence directed at government, or the government is intending to direct violence at the American people. I don't know, but they're anticipating violence, and what could precipitate that violence? And it's not the fact that Congress is corrupt, or the fact that Obama may not have been born in this country, or any number of reasons you can come to other than the economy goes south and people are suddenly unemployed and starving and they can't get any food. That'll push them over the edge.
It'll push them
that's
over.
That's enough to push them to where they might be willing to engage in violence.
It'll push them over the edge, but it won't. It'll be against each other, Al. That's
well, initially.
It'll be against each other.
It'll be against each other.
Because they don't know what happened. Most people don't know what happened to them. They're, one minute they're getting all these great benefits and so forth, and Obama was on the airwaves today and saying, oh, just how successful the health care, affordable health care is. All these people are signing up. 35% of them are youthful people in this and that. And it's like, why would anybody believe what he says when everything that he said about Obamacare going into it, he lied? So why would he tell the truth about these numbers and how great it is? But all it was an election ploy, because naturally he did bring it to the Republicans, and it was like these Republicans are like, gee, why do they still want to repeal this? They haven't moved off this issue for 5 years. So it was probably more or less an election appeal, but, you know, I mean, it's just...
I've got an article here from the Huffington Post. I haven't read it. I clipped it, but I haven't been able to read it. I found time to read it. But the headline is this. Obama lied about Obamacare, now wants political lying to be legal. Again, I haven't read the... I never thought of political lying had there was a problem with it. To the truth, I presumed it was always just... Well, of course, so they're politicians. Of course, they're lying. But... apparently, judging only by the headline, because I haven't read the article, Obama wants some sort of a law passed or regulation or who knows what, where, that would allow politicians to lie with impunity. I had no idea that there was liability for lying, but the article, the headline at least, implies that at the moment there is some sort of liability if a politician lies to us. All right. I don't know what that liability is. I'm looking forward to reading the article and trying to understand this and find out if there's a depth to this that's worth understanding. But all by itself, they want lies legalized. We're politicians. We should be allowed to lie to the public.
Why do they have to have it legalized? It doesn't really matter anyway. The people just go blindly on their way and, oh, yeah, well, he's a politician. It's expected. I mean, I can remember hearing that when I was a child. Everybody thought, oh, he's, you know, well, you know, we understand that they don't tell the truth, so that's okay. We know that, so we expect that, so then it's okay. So why do you have to legalize it?
Well, apparently, you know, there are a lot of people, there are a significant number, I won't say a lot, there are a significant number of people who have been studying the law and the legal system for the past 15, 20 years. Those numbers are growing. We see more people go to court and they represent them. They stand up without attorneys when they go to court. It's not a big number, but it's a growing number. And the point is that there are people in the American community that are beginning to understand how to apply the law, not just have the law applied against them, but how to use the law against the government, for example. And those people have attracted a certain amount of attention. The government's sitting back and saying, uh-oh, we're liable to get sued by these people. And if they get in front of a jury, the jury might agree with them. And so the government wants to legalize lying. Apparently somebody's figured out how to sue the government for lying, and they don't want to be sued for lying. That would be like being sued for taking political campaign contributions. They certainly don't want that to happen, Melody. So they're passing laws to allow them to do exactly what they've been doing. It's like Al Capone taking over City Hall in Chicago back in the 1920s. Of course he passed laws that would allow him to be a crook. All right? Our government's doing much the same. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Okay, folks, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom, and what's next, Melody?
Oh, let's go ahead, and what about the minimum wage boost would cost firms $15 billion?
Mm-hmm. The Congressional Budget Office, this is from the Associated Press, the Congressional Budget Office estimates that a Senate Democratic proposal gradually boosting the minimum wage to $10.10 hourly would force businesses to spend $15 billion more in salaries in 2017. The nonpartisan budget office says the increase would impose a $1 billion higher salary cost on state and local governments. The raise would increase federal salaries by just $2 million over the decade. Today's minimum is $7.25 an hour. They go on. The budget office previously estimated that the increase would mean $31 billion in higher 2016 earnings for low-paid workers, including but not directly covered by the proposal. It sounds like a great idea to increase minimum wage. And it would be a good idea. I have no objection to it if we still had high tariffs. Right? If the United States economy was essentially a closed loop, raising the minimum wage for, you know, employees, yeah, it might impose an additional $15 billion in costs on corporations. Okay, yeah. But the $15 would simply be put in the hands of the people who are working at the low end of the wage scale, and they would spend it, and the money goes back into the economy, and the economy would not be damaged. It's true that the wages would, that income or revenue or wealth would be redistributed a little bit. The rich wouldn't have quite as much. The poor would have a little bit more, but it'd be a temporary thing. But the total economy, if you started out and you had $1 million in the economy and you raised the minimum wage by $10 an hour, all right, fine. Out of the $1 million, instead of giving $100,000 to the poor, you might be giving $150,000 to the poor out of the million. And instead of having however many million going to the rich, you'd have, you know, less going to the rich. But
the economy itself, the same amount of money, the original $1 million would still be contained within the United States. But because our government has knocked the tariff barriers down by means of NAFTA and GATT and coming soon the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement, right? And they've given us the glories of global free trade. When the government raises the minimum wage for Americans, some people are going to say hooray, but businesses are going to say boo. And the businesses have to say boo. And that's simply because they're a bunch of greedy SOBs. That's not the problem here. The problem is because we are no longer protected by tariffs, American businesses have to compete with foreign corporations working in countries like China that have reduced wages. And when our government comes along and says, oh, guess what? We're going to play Santa Claus and make you corporations, you American corporations are going to have to pay more money for wages. What does that mean? It means they have just assumed an additional cost that makes them less competitive against cheap labor and cheap corporations located in China or India or third world countries. It's no longer a zero-sum equation. It's no longer a closed loop because they took the tariff barriers down. And if they raise minimum wage in this country, guess what? It's going to put more businesses in this country out of business. Because those businesses have to compete with foreign businesses that are not subject to congressional minimum wage laws. They can raise the minimum wage in this country to what might be the daily wage in some foreign countries. Now, how are we going to compete with those foreign countries? And how are we well served by having our own businesses pushed out of business in part by government regulations? I'm not sure if I'm getting this across to people, but what I'm trying to say is that if we still had our tariff barriers, it would be okay, not a problem. It would be some people would be annoyed that they'd have to cough up a little more money and the poor would be getting more money and so on. Some people would be annoyed by that, but it's not a big thing. The economy itself would not be diminished. But because we are in a global free trade area and we don't have tariffs to protect us, when we raise our minimum wage, we're making our corporations less competitive. We are contributing to unemployment. We are contributing to the wealth of foreign corporations and foreign workers who are working for far below our minimum wage. The only way this would be fair is if Congress could sit back and say, okay, we're going to raise the minimum wage, and it's not just going to be the minimum wage for the American people. It's going to be the minimum wage for the people of China. Now, if you want to raise the minimum wage for everyone around the world at the same time, all right, that's not a problem. But as long as Congress can only raise the minimum wage here in the United States but can't raise and doesn't try to raise the minimum wage in China, when they raise minimum wage, they raise corporate costs, they make corporations less competitive, corporations are more likely to go out of business. As they go out of business, we have more unemployment. You know, this is another one of those unintended consequences, perhaps, or maybe it is intended, I don't know, but we have a government that does things that are contrary to the best interests of the American people. And NAFTA and GATT are two of those things, and the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement will be another one. They will do what's right for major multinational corporations who have given Congress a substantial amount of money and bribed them, and they will sell the average people down the river. They'll generate a certain amount of support in the meantime by giving more money to the poor. But in the end, it will bode ill for all of us in this country. We won't do well.
Now, Al, I thought all these trade agreements created jobs.
Yeah, but not in this country.
I know that.
Yeah,
I know that is really that's another lie. I mean, that's another lie.
Well, they're doing great. Here's what they're trying to do. They try to tell us that it creates jobs for everyone, and it's simply not true.
No, it isn't.
It will create jobs for people in China and India and perhaps Mexico, but it's not creating jobs to a significant degree in this country. We are going to be impoverished, and whether that poverty comes at us because our government is simply incompetent or stupid or malicious is unclear, but we're headed for that poverty. You know, the American dream for over 200 years, every generation lives better than the previous generation. And the dream held up until the 1970s and has since stagnated and now is beginning to decline. Our government has destroyed the American dream. And they've done it with regulations and some grand idea about how to set up a new world order and everybody's going to sing kumbaya. But in the end, we the people are going to suffer because we've been fool enough to elect a bunch of morons or treasonous whores into Congress, and they have simply betrayed our best interests.
Well, you know, Al, it's we look at the number of years that has taken and all these agreements, the toll that it has taken. And I think people, they, you know, we talk about the conditioning of the people, but they really do become comfortable with a lower lifestyle. And I don't think many of them really understand. And the younger people, I don't think they really understand how the lifestyles were prior to all of these agreements. And they've been taught, they've been, you know, through the programming of the schools, of the internet, of you know, that globalism is good. And this is what they need to embrace because this will be their future. And so,
yeah, we're headed toward a time when we will all live pretty much at a standard of living comparable to what you find in Mexico.
And they won't know the difference.
No, and they won't know how to get back to it either. They won't get back to it. You know, one of the things that touches on this is right there in the Declaration of Independence, and it says, prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. In other words, even though the government may be involved in treachery or gross incompetence, take your pick, even though that might be happening, and they may be imposing evils upon the people of the United States, they knew back in 1776 that people, the way they're built, they'll put up with an endless amount of seemingly endless amount of injustice until they finally just say, okay, that's it, here we come, we're going to get you. And that's what we're seeing, and it's the kind of apathy that's built into our species. It's true here in the United States. It's true around the world. It may be more true in some countries than others, and it may have been less true at one point in this country than it is now, but it's been true all along. People don't want to fight. People really are pretty pacifistic, and they'll go a long ways to avoid getting into a fight. They'll put up with a lot of injustice to avoid going into a real fight. But eventually, you finally hit that gag reflex, and they say, okay, you want it that bad, we're going to give it to you. Yeah. We haven't hit that gag reflex. We can assume that maybe we will one day, but until then, the nation is going to continue to decline as we suffer evils, as long as the evils remain sufferable.
So as our standard of living declines, so does your purchasing power, and so does your wealth. You know,
so does your liberty.
So does your liberty.
Yeah, more important than
yeah,
your...
that's true. Than it very much.
Yeah, that's what this...
very much.
You know, what this country started out with was, again, Declaration of Independence and the extraordinary principles found in the second sentence of the Declaration of Independence. It said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's the second sentence, and it is unparalleled. It is the most radical, state political statement in Western political history. There's nothing else to compare to it. Because formerly in Western history, there was one individual in every country. He was the king. He was the sovereign. And the reason is because he had the divine right of kings. He got his rights directly from God. All else were subjects because they didn't. The Declaration of Independence came out and said, no, no, no. Everybody gets their rights from their creator. And everybody gets an equal endowment of those rights. And with that, they said, everyone in this country, every man, woman, and child is a sovereign. Under those circumstances, the government became our servant rather than our master. Third sentence of the Declaration says that to secure these rights, which rights? The God-given, unalienable rights. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. They're telling us the purpose of government as envisioned by the founding fathers was to secure to every man, woman, and even unborn child their God-given, unalienable rights. Didn't say they were going to secure their gold, didn't say their bank account, didn't say their 401ks or their Social Security. They said the first thing we got to secure in this country is those rights we receive from God. Today, no one even understands, or very few people even understand that principle was ever true or that it could be true again. My point is that this country started out, it was all about the rights you received from God. And the obligation of government to secure those God-given rights, not to secure your wealth, not to secure your, you know, your ticket to Disney World. It was about those rights from God, those unalienable rights. We should, if we were doing the same thing, we would be back on track. We, the American dream, would be restored, and we'd have a shot at living the life we should live, living the life that America was intended to be. We've been irresponsible, we've been ignorant, we've wasted our time watching TV programs that offer us nothing when we should have been reading books. We should have been learning about economics and philosophy and religion, and we should have taken the time to actually become informed and find out what is worth fighting for. And I guarantee you it's not those little green pieces of paper in your wallet, as hard as that is to believe. Those are just... you know, there's nothing there, folks. That's monopoly money. That's what we're using in this country is monopoly money. And we get excited about it, and we kind of worship it, and we chase it, and we fight for it and the rest of it, but it's just monopoly money. It's not real deal. We have been misled and deceived, and we're paying a price for it. We will stop paying the price when we educate ourselves to the point where we understand the scam and say, no, I'm not going to participate anymore. I don't wish to participate in that scam. And when we stop participating, the scam falls apart. It's just a Ponzi scheme. They run out of people who want, suckers who want to sign up, and guess what? The Ponzi scheme disappears. I'm Alfred Adisk. I'm here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We're out of time. We will be back on Monday. Have a happy Good Friday, a good, good Friday, a happy Easter, and we'll talk to you at the beginning of next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.